You don't love me. You never loved me.
Emotions are a completely subjective element of human physiology. Some say emotions are simply complex but predictable outcomes of the pain-pleasure functions of the nervous system.
How could you do this to me?
And why wouldn't they? The greatest fear of a rational mind is that hidden deep in the complex brain and body relationship, there is an unknown optional extra. That no matter how logical an individual's response to events in the world around them might seem to be, a person can still respond unpredictably, excusing themselves with a plea of temporary insanity. Emotions quiver and tremble just below the surface, where tension and pressure builds up metaphorically, as decorum and impatience, the two kind of continental plates of self-image and self-expression, grind against each other as the mind tries to squeeze its super-ego into the reality of being plain old you or me. Did I just say that out loud? Oh my God! Everybody's emotive central heating system builds up steam and pressure internally, and while everything may look all right to some naive rank outsider, deep down we know that if our internal pressure cooker of raging hormones and doubt doesn't get a chance to let off its steam every once in a while, woo-woo, nobody will know the pot has burnt dry. And another nervous breakdown tips over the edge into the public domain. So whether it's a rage against unrequited love, the loneliness of being, or that someone has stolen your parking space. Hey, I was just reversing in there. Unfriggin' believable. Back off. No, you back off.
What are you, crazy?
One of these days, pow, right in the kitchen.
So this week, Unspoken Words, the series that impassionately reflects on a single word and what a single word can inspire, has followed the bear into the woods to see if it leaves any tracks, taking with it a survival pack full of angst and raw nerves in order to test the emotive waters along the riverbank of tears. Tracking the tender-hearted deep into the forest of sadness, gaining a foothold to climb the mountain of love, descending deep into the valley of grief, camping out in the meadow of shame, where swarms of butterflies in the stomach mate with lumps in the throat, having wandered off the beaten track of acceptable behavior to find themselves.
Oh, man. I think, like, we're lost, you know? Like, where the hell are we? Wait a minute, I should have a map here somewhere. Ah, here it is. On my sleeve. It's shaped like a heart. Oh, isn't that cute? It's just so beautiful!
Emotions are surprisingly controversial, even though everybody has some. They find their way in and out of cultural expectations, regardless of how we coordinate the points where social conventions collide with our personal expectations.
Who do you think you are?
But one thing we know from mathematics is that, although they mean prizes, points don't actually have any size at all. A point is just a theoretical position without any real dimension or weight, which is why most of the ones I make in a conversation are usually completely ignored. But that's still an important point about making points. The point you're making doesn't really exist. Politicians like to use the mathematical term plotting when they make points because the points they make also have no weight or dimension to them. Consequently, when someone accuses them of making points that don't actually exist, a politician is quite happy to go on to make another one. Returning to emotions, Ever since my father passed away, I always get a bit emotional when the dad-son heart-to-heart scene comes up in any movie. Whether it's Spencer Tracy and Freddie Bartholomew in Captain's Courageous, even a soap like EastEnders when Frank and Ricky Butcher get together for a tete-a-tete, all the Karate Kid movies, or even that Rocky one where his manager dies halfway through the fight. Adrian! I don't know what it is, but there's some triggers out there that turn the otherwise rational me into nothing more than a teary-eyed, emotional puppet. A feeling that starts in my stomach and wells up, and I go all soft and blubbery inside. Mentally, I know it's a trigger, but somewhere inside me there's all this emotional armory, a kind of battery of mechanisms that rage against the machine. In fact, I have an almost infinite arsenal of emotive expressions, a bit like the scenes in The Matrix, where they call up all the stupid weapons they need to go back in and save their friend from all the nasty virtual bits of existence. I've got machine gun fire laughter to hide my embarrassment. Single sniper like shots of surprise. Don't! Wow! Covering fire of cuteness. Oh! Tripwires of frustration. You cannot be serious! Cluster bombs of copelessness. Oh my god, 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 oh my god. I get argumentative. I get sensitive. I'm delicate. I get moved. I get knocked down. I get up again. I get affected. I get excited, thrilled, overawed. I get speechless. Yeah, I know. You'd like that, wouldn't you? I get paranoid. In fact, I can sense how this is going. The slow, not-so-funny minutes drag on. The tap keeps dripping, driving you mad, and you feel trapped, trapped like rats on a sinking ship, listening helplessly as the captain insists he will be going down with it too. And you think, oh my God, we're in the hands of a crazy man, which kind of distracts you from taking some time to yourself to come to terms with meeting your maker. The end, bowing out with the final curtain, as you become consumed with the fear that you will likely perish, listening to the mad ramblings of the one person in command of this ship who should know what they're doing. Like Ishmael and Queequeg, who joined the whaling ship of Captain Ahab, only to find themselves all at sea, under the command of a complete sociopath who thinks everyone wants to join in their personal quest for doom and to find the giant white whale that ate their leg. And as the ship rolls, you begin to feel heavy. Your eyes begin to drop. Slowly, there is nothing but the sound of your own heartbeat. Slowly but surely, the air seems to solidify around you, and this voice becomes a weightless whisper, disappearing in the air as sleep calls you. Endless sleep. You're back in the room. Aroused, stirred, alive, thank goodness, we're alive, and happy, happy as Larry. Happy celebrating life, which is too short, because tomorrow is another day, and this is the first day of the rest of your life, and you can only describe the feeling as complete euphoria. It's not the DiCaprio and Kate Winslet ending of Titanic after all, where the band strikes up a tune on the sinking ship, trying to sell off their last box of signed CDs as people queue past them for the lifeboats. All right, give us a quid then. The band stops playing one by one as they look to see if anyone has changed for a 20. And the drummer is looking at you funny because he doesn't believe you when you say you're only 14. So you tell him, who wants your friggin' music anyway? Throwing the pound coin onto the listing deck where it rolls down the boards into the sea, which reminds you that in order to keep that perfect moment of complete euphoria that you just had, in order to escape certain death, in order to justify lying about your age, in order to get on the frigging lifeboat, you better start shoving your way through the crowd of women and children toward the overloaded dinghies rowing away into the dark night on the rolling waves of whatever it means to be alive. Because we're all emotionally dysfunctional in some way. We all have spaced-out friends on those social networks who keep posting virtual gifts and messages about their strawberry patch in Farmville. Friends who assume they're engaged in some sort of online emotional intimacy, as if being on screen is like being on Oprah. Because for some people, there's nothing better than instant gratification at the touch of a remote, where you can map out your emotional response to the world around you as if it were a perfectly formed scale model of how the world should be, uncontaminated by imperfect people. But the reality of reality TV is that you find yourself more embarrassed than inspired, realizing you decided to have a go because that's what everyone else thought was cool. And the reason you got picked in the first place was because you stood out from the crowd like an emotional sore thumb. You see, that's the thing. If you aren't constantly patrolling the borders of your emotional well-being, someone or something will come along and put one giant crimp in your day. Believe me, they will come. Just as they did in that Kevin Costner film, where he got obsessed with building a baseball ground in his cornfield, destroying half his crop and his livelihood in some mad midlife crisis-fueled excuse for a movie about dead sportsmen, where we get long shots of him standing in the middle of a baseball pitch, scanning the horizon for evidence of life, and sure enough, some ethically challenged ghosts from the past soon emerge from the cornfields, throwing hardballs at him, stoning him to the ground, and beating him with ghostly baseball bats like a bunch of rat catchers who found the nest, finally destroying his credibility as an actor forever. Unthinking monsters that pierce each other's hearts with sharp wooden stumps. The truth is that no matter how well you plan your television confession, saying how you really feel, revealing for the first time this naked truth is more like having a naked lunch with a naked civil servant who keeps telling you to log on to the naked website that is really only a thinly veiled front for some Russian mafia GTA-style underworld. Meanwhile, you have been well and truly ripped off like the twist in the tail of a badly made British gangster film with all them lovely jubbly cockney characters who was real gentlemen wallop.
You've got no right to do this to me!
And it's all over but the blubbering, the emotional tear-jerking crisis of missing the boat, being the last past the post, ruining the day you realized your life was never going to amount to being anything like President or Peter Andre. The time in one's life that might inspire otherwise model parents to take their child, dress it up as if it were an Airfix kit with paint and glue and makeup, and enter it in one of those child beauty contests.
Well, you know what, we're betting everything on this, yeah. Well, with the cutbacks recently, yeah, and the layoffs and the third mortgage on the subprime slum we bought, yeah, we thought it would be easy to rent out once we'd become famous and people realized that once we used to live there, we even had a plaque made to go on the wall. This is just, I guess, our last throw of the dice.
Yeah, ain't she cute, though?
You might be able to drift away from those pesky emotions for a while, bobbing along on the currents of the perfect moment, where the body shuts down everything but its emergency services, hollowing out the individual things that make us tick, the feelings that swaddle us in warm cotton wool or prickly barbed wire, the guilt that itches against us like horsehair shirts, the wishful thinking that we whip ourselves silly with, ripping the stuffing out of our feelings and desires. Which leaves me an emotional wreck washed up on the desert island of logic and reason, with nothing but a bookshelf full of self-help books and a few sticks to rub together, while another episode of Unspoken Words slowly recedes into the doldrums. My emotions make me Mac Dunlop, and thanks for listening. Bye for now.